Welcome to the Otherworld Fiction Podcast. Please like, subscribe, and share. We hope you enjoy the show. Listener discretion is advised. Season 1, Episode 2, The Mage's Story. The smoke from the city seemed like a small smudge in the evening sky. The group of five were camped on the edge of a huge pine forest that made up the land known as the Mouth of the World that abutted Teneris along its northern border, stretching across Omen from sea to sea. Our heroes had escaped from the city by disguising themselves and hiding among the long line of refugees that poured out of the city gates in their droves. Indeed, as they plodded along the road heading north, it seemed as if everyone who lived in the city was on the move. Despite the fact that the enemy had swooped down on them from the north, the refugees headed to where they had originated. Facing an oncoming enemy was preferable to attempting to cross the burning sands of the White Sand Sea to the south. Anyway, the invaders seemed to ignore the ordinary citizens of Teneris. They had other things on their mind. They had struck the city under orders from the Bear Queen to kill or capture the king and destroy the House of Alatrix. Hence the long trail of poor displaced citizens dragging and carrying anything they could salvage. Of course, there had been casualties. No such attack could prevent civilian casualties, and the Alsev forces were not that concerned who fell under the pads and claws of the Bear Riders, or where their swords, spears, and arrows fell. Such casualties had a name. They were called collateral damage. The group had traveled in the back of a merchant's cart, alongside members of the merchant's family, being juggled around with various boxes and sacks, children, anxious parents, and relatives. It was perhaps the most uncomfortable, overcrowded journey any of them had ever taken. At night, they wrapped old cloaks around themselves and slept under the wagon parked at the side of the road. It was there, under the wagon in a series of hurried, hushed whispers, that Attell revealed her plan. She intended to lead the four others north, to travel through the forests of the country known as the Mouth of the World. From there, she intended to push further north, through Dragonhead and the Great North Plains into Agnia, from where she intended to board a ship, to take them to the North Islands where she hoped to make contact with a pirate lord, and declare her assistance in their battle with the Cosmic Gate. The others marveled at her ambition. Despite fearing that she had made a wrong decision, each of the group felt that they were compelled to make the journey with her. Anero and Gunfer had little choice as they were royal guards, and Attell was a princess of the royal household. Juno went along as she felt it was her duty to look after the princess. Xanthar went along because he had no choice. He couldn't return to the city and the court. He had more or less been expelled. So they agreed. They would travel to the Southern Isles and face the consequences and dangers offered by the appearance of the Cosmic Gate, whatever they may be. As they approached the boundaries of Teneris and entered the heavily forested land of the Mouth of the World, they took leave of the merchant and his family. The main road continued northwards along the Great Northern Road, but Attell had insisted they leave the main route and take a lesser road that led through the dense coniferous forests. Now 3 days from the city, they were camped just inside the forest. Gunfer and Juno had gathered firewood and built a small fire. Anero had surprised them all by proving himself to be a hunter. Granted, all he'd managed to catch were 3 small ground birds, but plucked and cooked over the open fire they had proved delicious eating. To everyone's surprise, he revealed that he had been brought up in the country, in a farm not too far away from the city. But being the youngest of 6 boys, there was no room for him on the farm, and he had joined the city guard. The pay was good, and it seemed an easy option, at least until the Alsev invasion. Attell sat and looked back in the direction of the city. From their position, they could still see the Great Northern Road and the specks and pinpricks of the nighttime campfires of the refugees. She wasn't really thinking of anything but the attack and her need to travel to the magic portal. The thought of magic stirred a memory. She turned to Xanthar, who was licking the remaining meat juices from his fingers.
"Xanthar, you are a magician, are you not?"
she asked him. Xanthar nodded.
"I have studied the arts most of my life. It has been difficult ever since your family's ban on the use of magic."
Attell nodded. She remembered the scorn and derision that even the word magic created in the Hall of Lords. It had been her grandfather that had banned magic years before she was born. For the life of her, she couldn't remember why.
"It was outlawed well before your birth. So why did you take up such a banned practice?"
she asked. The rest of the group turned to look at Xanthar. The conversation was the most interesting one they had experienced since they left the city. Xanthar looked directly at Atel.
Princess, it is a long story that has long been kept secret. My father was attached to your grandfather, King Otto, as a young apprentice. He experimented with potions and spells in the very tower I practiced in. He worked hard and was talented. In a short time, he became a mage and then an archmage, perhaps the youngest ever. Then the word came from the kingdom of Droland that two magicians had been discovered to be behind the attempted assassination of their King Olaf. He was a bad and cruel ruler, but that seemed beside the point. On the failure of the assassination, they were put to death alongside half of the Droland generals and council leaders, whether they were involved in the plot or not. From that moment on, all rulers feared the power of the mages, and magic was banned in all of the kingdoms, including the House of Alatrix. Mages were thrown out of their towers, and the lucky ones left to wander the lands. The unlucky ones were hounded and eventually put to death. My father was one of the unlucky ones.
The group fell silent at the mage's story.
Why were you allowed to practice?
Atel eventually asked.
I think your father felt some guilt at the way my father had been treated. He allowed me to reside in the tower, but never called on my services and left me to my own devices to practice and develop my own skills. In actual fact, I believe he forgot all about me until you asked me to intervene.
Atel lowered her head.
I'm sorry about that, but I knew he would not listen to me. I'm afraid I have been banned from the court since I disobeyed his orders not to go traveling.
You are a big disappointment to him,
Xanthar added.
Why? Because he wanted a princess who sat at his right hand in fancy robes and played the games the lords play? I am not some ornamental chess piece to be maneuvered at the king's pleasure. He has a pet lapdog in my brother Nyx.
Juno let out a little gasp. She was a loyal member of the king's court and had never heard such words spoken against the king. An arrow cut short the tensions by addressing the archmage. You say you've practiced the dark arts?
Magic,
Xanthar corrected. Whatever. Can you actually do magical stuff? Xanthar looked down into his beard.
In theory,
he replied. What do you mean, in theory? Anero asked suspiciously.
I've never really tried it out in practice,
Xanthar muttered into his beard. Oh, may the righteous gods of the unwilling protect us, Anero said. Atel looked at the archmage.
But when I was a child, you did tricks for me. You made things disappear. You cast visions so that we could see what my father was up to.
Xanthar nodded.
Tricks to amuse a young princess,
he remarked.
Well, why don't you try one of those tricks now? Why don't you make your magic and let us see what is happening in my father's court?
Atel asked. Xanthar stroked his beard and thought for a few seconds and then shrugged.
I can see no point in not trying.
They sat back and watched as Xanthar drew an intricate pattern in his codex. He motioned in the direction of the fire. Suddenly, the flames rose and flickering images began appearing in the fire. They were images of the city. The group moved closer to the flames to get a better look. As the image cleared, they found themselves looking down on the city. They could see Alsev warriors walking the streets. Bear riders patrolled the outer reaches. Suddenly, Anero pointed into the fire.
They have not taken the citadel. Look, our archers still man the ramparts.
The Hall of Lords and the King's Palace are still standing, Anero exclaimed. They all looked closer. It was true. Archers from the House of Alatrix stood on the ramparts firing arrows at any attacker foolish enough to step into range. Evidently, by the number of dead lying at the base of the citadel walls, many had.
It looks as if the attack has turned into a siege,
Gunfer remarked. Atel looked up from the fire.
How long could they hold out for?
Anero smiled. About a year. The cellars and dungeons of the citadel are deep, very deep. At the bottom is a well. It draws water from the artesian aquifer. The water is pure and it can't be poisoned or tampered with. Also, there have always been preparations for such an event.
King Bruno and his father were very paranoid men. They always foresaw disasters, so inside the cellars are large stocks. Pickled meats, salted and preserved meats and fish, wheat, barley, flour. They have enough food stocks for at least a year. Maybe more if he introduces rationing.
Maybe considerably less if the enemy introduces artillery,
Gunfer added. Attell ignored his comment.
What about our airships?
She asked. Xanther concentrated, and the image faded and then reappeared. This time, they were looking at a series of burnt outbuildings. A number of men could be seen scurrying about. Outside a huge undamaged hangar, a group of men were pulling on ropes, dragging an airship into the open.
It seems the airport was hit at the same time as the city. Our troops were caught unprepared. Until repairs are done, I would say that we've seen our one and only airship, Anero remarked.
Attell looked away from the fire.
I think we escaped just in time. At least outside, we can do something.
Anero gave a slight snort.
And what do you imagine the five of us can do against the Alsev attackers? Word will have gone back to the Bear Queen and reinforcements will already be on their way. There'll be columns of soldiers and bear riders followed by cannon, mortar, trebuchet, and mangonel.
In which case, we stop them,
Attell exclaimed. Before anyone could challenge her, Gunfer put his hand to his ear.
Listen, I can hear something.
They all fell silent and listened. They could hear a distant droning.
Airship! Get under cover,
Anero said. Hastily, they put out the fire and sank deep into the undergrowth beneath the trees. It seemed like an age as the sound grew louder and louder. Then, through the trees above them, a large, dark shape blotted out the sky. The airship was so low it almost scraped the tops of the trees. They could actually see into the gondola hanging under the enormous blimp. It was full of Alsev troopers. Each one felt a shiver pass down their spines as the airship passed over. They were about to break cover when Gunfer held his hand up.
There's another one following on behind,
he said quietly. Sure enough, another passed over. Then another, and another. In total, 6 airships passed overhead.
50 troops per airship. I make that another 300 troops on their way,
Gunfer remarked.
Attell looked at Xanther. Could you do anything?
She asked. Xanther looked blank.
Such as?
How about a lightning storm? Anero replied.
Xanther stopped to think for a moment.
I could try.
He moved out from his hiding place into the open and whispered an incantation into the pages of his codex. The rest followed, watching him with interest. Suddenly and forcefully, he cast one of his hands towards the sky. He drew on the page of his codex frantically with the other. The codex was now hovering in midair. There was a flash that blinded them all, followed by the sound of crashing. As their sight cleared, they could see the tops of the nearby trees catch fire, and like Xanther's book, they came crashing down to the earth. Xanther looked shaken.
I need a bit more room.
There's a clearing over there.
Juno pointed a few yards away, deeper into the forest.
Xanther ran to it and repeated his gestures. This time, the flash flew up into the sky. Then a huge black cloud descended and a clap of thunder rolled across the skies. Suddenly, a bolt of lightning exploded from the clouds. More by luck than good aim, a fork of lightning hit the tail of the last airship. For a moment, nothing seemed to happen. Then a flicker of light ran along the spine of the balloon. That was followed by another bright flash and a huge explosion. When their eyesight returned once again, there were only 5 airships left in the sky. They turned to Xanther. He had collapsed onto the forest floor in a heap. The codex had landed on his face. It took the best part of an evening before Xanther was fully aware of what had happened. For some reason, the use of magic or the power it created had completely drained the man. For the first couple of hours, all he could do was sleep. When he awoke, they found he was unable to speak and just sat propped upright against the trunk of a tree. His eyes were wide open, and he kept blinking. Anero, rather unkindly, observed that with his hood up, the magician looked like an owl. Nobody thought it was funny. After 4 hours and a bowl of thin soup that Juno had created from the bones of the previous night's meal, he managed a few words.
What happened?
He asked.
You created a storm and blew up an airship,
Gunfer remarked, as if the feat had been an everyday occurrence. Xanther sighed.
Oh, Well, that's all right then,
he said as he fell back to sleep.
Better not to mention the forest fire he created, Anero said over the magician's snores.
As the evening passed into night, Attell sat upright.
I have an idea, she declared.
There was an audible sigh from Anero.
Attell ignored it.
If, as you say, the Bear Queen will send her artillery, she will have to use the Great Northern Road. No other road is wide enough to take that much siege gear.
Everyone nodded with the exception of Xanther, who just continued snoring loudly.
Well, why don't we booby-trap the road? It's time for a surprise attack of our own.
The thought took some time to sink in.
We have no explosives,
Gunfer eventually remarked.
No, we don't. But we have him,
Attell said as she nodded towards the sleeping magician. Before anyone could put forward any objections, Attell continued.
We find a weak part along the road, somewhere where we can undermine it, or somewhere in a pass where we can send an avalanche down onto it.
Gunfer shook his head.
I've traveled that road. I don't remember any passes that would be suitable for an avalanche.
What do you remember?
She asked. Gunfer fell silent as he tried to imagine the route he had taken.
It was a number of years ago, he remarked in his defense.
Think,
Attell urged him. Everyone fell silent. After some time, Gunfer spoke again.
There's a pass. It's no good for an avalanche from above, but the road passes through the top of a river valley. Due to all the flooding, the road is high up the side of a mountain. If we could somehow destabilize the earth beneath the road, it might collapse into the river below.
Anero smiled. How far away is this valley? Gunfer thought hard.
I'd say about 2 days from here.
How do we know the artillery hasn't already passed through the valley?
Juno asked.
I'm pretty sure we'd have heard it, Anero added. We're only 3 miles south of the Great Road, and the sort of transport needed to carry the artillery makes a hell of a noise.
In which case, tomorrow morning we'll strike out for the river valley and the mountain road,
Attell declared. It actually took them a full 3 days to find the valley. They approached it from the far side of the river and found a small bridge that crossed below the high ridge the road ran on. They all looked up, scanning the ground on the hillside.
There,
Gunfer eventually said and pointed towards a section of the road that seemed to be on the steepest part of the mountainside.
That's gonna take some digging, Anero observed.
I wish we knew how much time we had,
Attell said and looked at Xanther. The man was still pale from his use of magic, but he picked up on the princess's hint from the look on her face.
I will cast a seeking spell, he said.
A fire was lit and the magician sat in front of it. He drew a twisting series of patterns and shapes into his book. Soon images were beginning to appear in the flames. It was of a military column marching. At its head were 20 or so bear riders sat astride their mounts. Behind them were a platoon of foot troops. They were followed by a number of very large, low-slung, flat wagons, which were heavily laden. The loads were covered in tarpaulins, but by their shape the observers could tell that underneath the coverings were the cannon, mortars, mangonels, and trebuchet that Anero had surmised earlier. On those wagons there was everything that was needed to break walls down and end a siege.
The Bear Queen is taking this very seriously, Gunfer remarked.
How far away are they?
Attell asked. The magician gave a shrug of his shoulders.
About a day, maybe more. It's difficult to tell.
That doesn't give us much time, said Anero.
They all looked up at the chosen section of the road.
Perhaps I could use a spell. Remove some of the earth for you.
Gunfer looked closely at him.
It won't be as powerful as the lightning spell, will it? We don't want the entire mountain to come down on top of us.
Xanther shook his head.
I'll do my best to control the force this time.
They stood back and watched as the magician drew a symbol. He moved his other hand and flicked his fingers in the direction of the hillside just beneath the road. At first, nothing seemed to happen. Then slowly, almost clod by clod, lumps of earth began to loosen and roll down the hillside. Then rocks began to tumble down the hill. After half an hour, the rockfall stopped. Anero and Gunfer climbed up the hill and took a look at the damage. It was well done. Above their heads, sections of the road were totally unsupported. There was no way it could support the weight of the wagons that were still a day away. It was a majority decision that they should stay and watch the result of their plan. They recrossed the river and made a small camp inside the edge of the forest. From their camp deep in the undergrowth, they could see the road plainly above the bushes. They sat back and waited. It was early evening of the following day when they first heard the noise of the approaching enemy column. There was dust and noise. At first, a group of scouts walked along the road. Halfway across the mountainside, they stopped and looked down into the valley. The five of them held their breath. Satisfied there was nothing in the valley to endanger the column, the scouts continued until the road left the mountain and disappeared into the trees. A few minutes later, a long line of bear riders walked along the road. The observers could tell that the bears were nervous about the height. As they crossed, they swung their large heads from side to side. The riders pulled hard on the reins and forced the animals to walk forward. The troops that marched behind didn't even stop to look at the view. Then the first of the heavy wagons appeared. As it rolled along the road, lumps of earth began sliding down the mountainside. No one on the road noticed. As the third wagon reached the halfway point, the first wagon was just about to reach the forest, and the fifth wagon had just appeared on the road. The entire road suddenly collapsed. To the observers, it looked as if the center gave way first, and its sudden disappearance sent a ripple along the rest of the road. Earth and rocks fell, and the entire road collapsed, taking the low transporters and their cargo with it. The group watched from the safety of their hiding place in the bushes. As the wagons tumbled and spun down the mountainside, they shed their loads. Cannons bounced down the hill, falling apart as they bounced off the hillside. Mangonels and trebuchets fell and smashed so that by the time they reached the river, they were just broken pieces of wood. The noise and sudden movement disturbed the bears, and many reared and threw their riders, who followed the armory down the mountainside. At either end of where minutes ago the road used to be, foot soldiers stopped and watched the artillery fall and roll and bounce until it reached the bottom of the hill and fell into the river. Some tried to follow it down and scrambled down towards the river.
"Time we weren't here," Anero muttered,
and the five of them slipped silently into the forest and quickly walked away from the scene. To be continued. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider supporting the Otherworld Fiction Podcast on Patreon, or by listening and subscribing on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening, and please, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.